Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Don't sweat the technique. Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Battery Chuck, Dana Brown doesn't say too much. He just likes to lie constantly. Alex, do you trust downtown Dana Brown or slick Nick Caserio? Who do you trust the most?
They're both word salad PhDs. I think I trust Nick more. I think Nick's not going to say anything.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Nick will talk. He's just not going to give you anything of, like, substance.
Right.
Like, he'll say stuff, and, right, like, it's tangible, and it gives you an idea, like, what his philosophy is a little bit, but he's not going to give you anything that gives anything away with, like, the current crop of players, free agents, draft picks, that sort of thing. Whereas Dana Brown's going to be willy-nilly with whatever he says.
He's like diarrhea of the mouth. He's, yeah, just throwing it all out there and then hoping something sticks, and if he hits a date for a return on a guy with an injury, hopefully it comes close.
Yeah, I'd go Nick on that one as well. Todd, the show, Bregman is more to the team than just stats. He probably has the best work ethic. I remember when everybody said that about Correa, too. Oh, the Astros are going to have this leadership problem now that Correa's gone. They won the World Series the next year.
Yeah, look, I think that everybody's trying to put a value on everything. Like, you know, people the other day on social media were saying, Gold Glove, pay the man more. No, because everybody already knows he was an above-average defender. There's no one saying that he's not. But at the end of the day, he's still 31 years old, and he's not the defender he used to be, doesn't have the range he used to be, doesn't have the arm he used to have, and he never had a great arm to begin with. So everything's going to factor in, and the market's still going to be the market. At a 31-year-old third baseman, the best-case scenario is what Chapman got, for the most part.
Oh, I don't think it's best case.
Maybe he gets more.
I think that might be worst case.
I think best case in his mind is a lot more, but I think that's the going rate.
I would take the over.
You think he's going to get?
I think he's going to get greater than $151 million. Yes.
For how many years?
Does it matter?
I mean, I could see the AAV being around 30. I don't think it's going to be higher than I don't think it's going to be like 35. I don't think it's going to be like, because of his age, if he's going to want the higher AAV, it's going to be a lot less years than he's looking for if he's looking for 6.
I mean, Matt Chapman's the same age, isn't he? Chapman might even be a year older. Chapman, yeah, he's a little bit older than Bregman.
I think that's why I believe that the market is what Chapman got.
Okay.
If he wants more than that, he's going to have to take less years. Because I don't think that he's in this. I just don't think he's.
You think Bregman's total is over or under 151?
I think that he can get 30 a year for five years.
So you think under?
Yeah.
I'll take the over. You want a little drink bet on that?
I don't care.
Come on. Put your coffee gift card where your mouth's at.
Sure.
You want a coffee bet on it or a vending machine drink on it?
Either one.
All right, we'll do that. Mark it down, Brian. Mark it down. 4952, postseason success for me. Tucker is a bum. I wouldn't call Tucker a bum, but he has disappeared in the postseason. The free agent list is not robust. I take a look at Rizzo. Absolutely not. Yankees will get Alonso and replace Soto. That'd be interesting if Alonso goes to Yankee Stadium. I think Soto's gone, though. I don't think Soto will be back with the
Yankees. I think Soto's a Met.
I think he's going to be a Dodger.
How do they afford him?
It's the Dodgers.
Because of the Ohtani deal?
It's the Dodgers.
I don't think he's a Dodger. I think he's a Met. I think that this is the revisit of Cohen just going all in. I think the Mets are going to spend a mad amount of money again this offseason trying to compete with the Yankees. And I think that I think Alonso could be a Yankee. I just don't think Alonso is going to be worth what a lot of teams are going to throw at him. But I think that Soto's a hell of a baseball player, and I'd love to see him go to the Mets, get him out of the American League, and get him away from the Yankees.
If those are the three options, Mets, Dodgers, Yankees, I would go Mets, Dodgers, Yankees. Mm-hmm. Agreed. Juan Soto, 21-year-old Juan Soto. 6602, Tucker equals Harden. That's not a bad comp. Regular season success, postseason, not so much. 4952, go ahead.
Tucker's a killer bee.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't have a B in his name, but I see what you did
there. No, but I'm saying he's like Bagwell Biggio. He's going to have great regular seasons. And so far, the track record is he's not great in the playoffs.
He's got a title, though. Like, I know that his individual numbers aren't great, but he's got a title. He's had some big hits. I think he's greater in the postseason than Bagwell and Biggio. Like, he's had his pinnacle has been higher.
He was part of a title. It wasn't him that drove them to the title.
No, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. 4952, it's just time to get younger to sustain success. See, that's where I'm at. I'm there. Now, I don't know what they think of DeZinzo as a third baseman, but I don't hate that idea. Like, people, oh, the Astros don't have this heir apparent for Bregman. And you're probably right. They don't have this heir apparent for Bregman. But if you're comfortable with him defensively at third, DeZinzo, which I'm not sure they are. He didn't play third base in the bigs last year. Now, he did in the minors and was a shortstop. Was it in college at Ohio State that he was a shortstop? Maybe, maybe not. He's had better minor league numbers than Jeremy Pena did whenever they handed the shortstop job to Jeremy Pena. People lose that. Like, people forget that people were – they wanted Andrelton Simmons. See. Like, Jeremy Pena's minor league numbers were lesser than Zach DeZinzo. So, if they think that DeZinzo's defense is good enough to play third, the idea that there's not this heir apparent, well, you never thought that with Jeremy Pena either. And – there's the other guy, Bryce Matthews, who I think is probably the more likely of the two to be the third baseman.
God, that was a blast from the past. Andrelton Simmons.
Remember that?
I remember
people
when he
wanted Andrelton Simmons.
And he was the Angel shortstop where everybody thought he was a really, really good defender.
He was.
I think DeZinzo can hit. I think DeZinzo's bat is good. And I think it's major league good. He can be a good major league hitter. He can be a decent major league hitter. I don't know where his defensive position is. I don't know that I feel comfortable with him next year at third base. Because you're right. Matthews is the long-term solution at either shortstop or third base or somewhere in the infield. And I think that he will be up sooner rather than later. But do I think that either of those guys is the right guy next year to play third base? I just don't. I'm not feeling it.
DeZinzo better offensively than Pena was whenever he got his chance.
I think he's a good offensive. Like I said, I believe in him offensively.
And I'm with you about, I don't know what they think of him at third base. And I haven't seen him play third base. I don't watch minor league baseball. I listen to it every single time that they're on 92.5, but I don't watch it. I don't know what DeZinzo looks like at third base. Now, the fact that he didn't play there a single, I think he played there once as like late game. They had no choice, mm-hmm. but never started there. Like, okay, maybe they don't think he's great defensively there. Maybe they don't view him as a third baseman. So that kind of changes things a little bit. Dana Brown did mention DeZinzo yesterday. When he was talking to the media, he said if he comes into camp and plays well, maybe first base will be his everyday job. We're very open to getting production from some of these young guys. I'm not afraid to go with young players. That's from Chandler Rome. So that tells me that they're not going to sign a first baseman, right?
Yeah, that tells you – well, at least that's one of the options is that they're not going to go out into the market for a first baseman. But it also tells me that Yiner Diaz is probably not going to be an alternative for you at first base either.
I think there would be a better chance of Yiner at first base with this quote than a free agent at first base.
Agreed, but I think that what it sounds like is they're going to give DeZinzo every opportunity to play first base,
mm-hmm.
and that means Yiner's going to be your catcher, and that means Caratini is going to be your backup catcher and or pinch hitter kind of thing, and I'm not sure that that's the best option for this team.
McTaggart, who I think just plugged in as anybody with the Astros, sure. He had a newsletter 2-3 weeks ago where he says that he thinks that Yiner could eventually move to first, but not next season. So with McTaggart saying that, it gives me a pretty good idea that he will not be the first baseman next year. But with this quote, and again, how much are you putting stock in what Dana Brown has to say? But if he's saying that Zach DeZinzo has a chance to win the first base job out of spring training, that tells me that they're not interested in signing a free agent at first base. And it also tells me that they're probably going to roll out, at least their plan right now, is to roll out with a platoon of John Singleton against righties and Zach DeZinzo against lefties.
Yeah.
That's what I read out of it.
That I would say that I completely 100% agree that it tells me they're not going out into the free agency market looking for a first baseman. That then the interesting question to me is, are you looking for an outfielder? Because is Yordan going to be your DH, or is Yordan going to be a guy that's going to platoon in the outfield as well? Because bet aside, I don't want Yordan playing anything but DH next year, and I think that's the best position for him. And I think if you could find, if you're not looking at first base, but you could find a bat in the outfield so that he could be healthy and play and be in the lineup all the time at designated hitter, I'm fine with that because offensively I think they would be okay. The bigger question, and then the other spinoff of that is Caratini going to get a lot less at bats than last year?
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, I don't, unless they're using Yiner as a DH from time to time, which I don't like because I don't want Yordan to play left field. Dana Brown was talking about like priorities, and he talks about Bregman being a priority, but he also mentioned some of the other things on the to-do list for the Astros this offseason.
Yeah, so the biggest priority is third base, without a doubt. I mean, we would love to have Alex Bregman back. It's our biggest priority. So, I mean, then if we could you know, do something to firm up, you know, production at first base, and get some help in the outfield, maybe with a nice right hand. I mean, a nice left hand bat. To work out with Myers and McCormick. I mean, that would be good as well. And then maybe add some more depth to the bullpen. And as I've always told you guys, I'm always in the market for starters. So if we have any opportunity to acquire starters, you know, through trade or whatever, we would do that as well.
So interesting there. That's a lot of money. Firm up production at first base. Now, maybe he's doing that with Singleton right. And DeZinzo. Starting pitching, relief pitching. He talked about trading for a starting pitcher.
It
makes me think he's not in the market for a free agent starting pitcher.
Caught my ear that he would be looking to deal to try and add a starting pitcher in a trade, and that's interesting to me because I think that they have some guys that he would probably throw into a deal.
I think that's more just keeping the eye open. I don't think that he's going to be shopping for a starting pitcher. I think if somebody comes to him with like an offer, he wouldn't refuse it. Now, I do think that they signed one reliever just to kind of bridge the gap a little bit. He mentioned also that they will tender Chaz McCormick and Jake Myers. Some people are like, oh, are they going to get rid of them to save a little bit of money? No, that would be silly. It'd be foolish. Both of them are making peanuts. Bring both of them back. Now, I think they could trade Jake.
I think they're going to trade Jake. That's what I was leaning towards. As part of a deal, he's making trades. I think Jake's going to be in a trade.
This is the offseason that I wanted a year ago. Firm up first base production, sign a starter, bring in a left-handed bat. I wanted this an offseason ago. So Dana Brown's acting a year later. Now, I do think a left-handed bat makes sense in the outfield. I think that Jock Peterson kind of catches my attention. He's just so bad defensively.
He's bad defensively.
But he also mentions the outfield part. Like, it makes me wonder if Yordan Alvarez is just a full-time DH.
I hope so. I hope that this is the realization they've come to because they know how less than they are if he's not in the lineup as an offensive weapon. And I think that should be the number one priority. As much as we have always kidded and joked and had the Yordan rules, it's time to just make him your full-time designated hitter and roll with somebody else. I hope that they legitimately go out and get an outfield possibility as a left fielder so that he doesn't have to play and you upgrade your offense with a guy that can actually swing the bat from the left side.
See, I think you can get away with a bad outfielder in left field at Minute Maid Park. Yeah, I think that Jock is doable because Minute Maid Park is an easy – that's not an easy left field to play. It's just not very rangy. It's not very big.
Exactly. I was going to say, it's not about how much ground you cover. It's about just playing the idiosyncrasies of the scoreboard and the crevices and the different ways the walls turn. But basically, all you got to do is turn around and figure out how to play the wall.
Be careful who you call an idiosyncrasy now. Why not move Yordan to first as 3590? That experiment failed in the minor leagues. It's just not going to happen. I know that it would be awesome because, hey, Yordan's going to play the field, and he's going to occupy first base, and you can have a slugger at first base. That experiment failed. It's not going
to
happen.
Do you know what could happen to his hamstring if he stretches?
I know everything that can happen to Yordan. Rolling out of bed.
He goes to make a stretch and dig a ball out of the dirt, look out.
He didn't make his city in Tampa because he aggravated his neck with the hotel pillow. So like
a smoke bomb in Atlanta.
He can get injured anywhere. Here was Dana Brown on Yusei Kikuchi, the idea of potentially bringing him back.
Kikuchi's time and Houston was really, really good. And so, we would be excited to have him back as well. That would be a nice piece to add to our rotation. And so, talking with Scott, we're going to try.
That sounds like he's gone.
It does.
It sounds like his time. When he said Kikuchi's time in Houston was good, that basically is a thanks for the memories and good luck on your next venture.
That was a goodbye.
Yep.
That was a goodbye. And then listen to this one for Dana on Justin Verlander, because we saw yesterday the reports he's going to talk to his agent on this. After listening to it, I have a totally different reaction.
I'm talking to Mark Pieper today, so, we'll know a little bit more about that. But again, JV's time here in Houston's been outstanding, been a big part of the winning tradition here. And so we're going to talk with Mark and probably know a little bit more later about that.
So he's going to talk to his agent.
He gone.
Not yet. He'll know a little bit more. He'll know a little bit more after talking to him.
He gone.
Meanwhile, with Bregman, he's already had back and forth with Boris. Like whenever I saw the headline yesterday of, oh, he's going to talk to JV's agent. Oh, he's going to be back, $10, $12 million for 1 year. After listening to it, it doesn't sound like they're in on Justin Verlander.
He gone. My takeaway is, we're going to talk to his agent just to verify what he's looking for, knowing full well we're not going to pay what he's looking for.
Yeah.
And we saw enough that, and again, he started it out with kind of like a thanks for the memories. He was great when he was here and when he was an Astro, but he's going to be somewhere else next year.
And if he hasn't talked to his agent yet, he's not a priority.
Right.
Because what do we know about Bregman and Boris? He's already talked to them and has had back and forths with them.
This also tells me Jim Crane decided this is the year that I don't get involved and say, go get JV again.
Well, he didn't. He didn't the year he went to the Mets.
But he told him to go get him back.
That was more Verlander breaking up with Crane versus Crane breaking up with Verlander, though.
But he went and told him to get him back, and he gave up two prospects to get him back.
I think half the cost, though.
Nonetheless, though, I think that this is the year that Crane says, I don't need JV back anymore.
I think you're right.
But on the flip side, he did say, I want Alex Bregman back with the Astros.
Yeah. I think that's very much in play.
I think that's exactly what he did.
4975, bring back Jason Hayward. I don't hate the idea. I just don't view Jason Hayward as an everyday starter in left field against right-handed pitching. Like, I think you need to do better than that. I think Hayward's more of a bench outfielder, and I think that you need it. If you're going to sign a left-handed outfielder, he needs to be able to play left field every day against right-handed pitching.
If he is, and again, if you get – his whole motto is going to be, we have to get creative. If you get creative and you move Jake and you create an opportunity in your outfield, whether you get somebody else to be your everyday left fielder or not, I don't mind Jason Hayward as my fourth outfielder, the way the Dodgers used him a year ago. Left-handed bat, good arm, steady defender if you need him to be. But when you put him in the lineup, he's experienced. He's got a good eye at the plate. I have no problem with that.
It just can't be your only left-handed outfielder.
No.
And you probably have to trade Myers.
I think you're going
to. But I really don't want to trade Myers. I want Myers to be your fourth outfielder that only plays against lefties, and he comes in late in games and plays center field. How I need to use Myers.
I'm good moving on from Jake Myers, and I don't.
Depends on the return.
I don't need him to be the Jake Mariznick.
Why not?
Because I've just seen enough of Jake Myers. I think you can find someone else to play defensively for a couple innings.
Might be Trammell.
But I'm ready to give someone else a try.
Yeah, I don't want him to be my everyday center fielder. I think he's a fourth outfielder that plays against lefties, and he's your defensive reserve for Jock Peterson whenever Peterson has to come out of a game late with a lead. All right, 713-780-ESPN. College football rankings. The committee ranked them for the first time this year. What is the committee telling you? 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Guys, before we go to the break, a word for Vandiford Air. You can go to VandifordAir.com right now and see all the services they offer. You want to put a humidifying system right into your AC units, they can do that. You want to repipe your house, they can do that. You got issues when it comes to getting cold in the wintertime and you need to work on your heating units, they can help you with that too. But the main thing that I'm focused on telling you about is the way they handle air conditioning problems. Whether it's your entire HVAC system or it's just a part that's needed to fix your AC or you want to put in a new AC unit, they are the people to call because they take care of you every step of the way. And I mean that sincerely because of the fact that they put everything in writing and they back up everything with a guarantee. It's phenomenal. And with a service company, that's all you can ask for. And why so many other companies don't do what Vandiford does, because they don't want to be on the hook to make sure you're happy when it possibly could cost them more money. Vandiford makes sure they back up and they guarantee everything they do. That means you know they're going to do quality work the first time. They're going to use quality parts and they're going to do a quality job for you because you're satisfied. Satisfaction's guaranteed. From the time you call them, they guarantee within 24 hours they will be back at your door to check out what you got going on. Most companies aren't going to give you any kind of guarantee. It's going to be based on all the other people that they have to deal with. Vandiford says you call them within 24 hours, they're out to see you. And then it gets better because everything that's going on with your AC unit, they're going to put it in writing. If it's a part that needs to be replaced or the whole system. So you have it in writing and you have something you can go back to and say, this is what you said was going to be done. This is the price you quoted me to finish the job. And from that point, everything is all about guarantees as well. From the work that their people do to the actual way that the part and or the system works to the temperature it achieves, it is all 100% satisfaction guarantee or your money back. That's all you could ever ask for with any kind of service company. Specifically in Houston, Texas, when you're dealing with AC problems, that's what you want. Knock their number in your phone right now. Use it whenever you need it or maybe call them before it gets too late and have them check out and see what your system is up to these days. 281-557-COOL. Put that in your phone. 281-557-2665. That's the number to get to Vandiford Air. That's the number you save in your phone. That's the number the minute something goes wrong or you hear something that doesn't sound right with your AC unit, you call, they come out to see you, and the job gets done right the first time. I believe in Vandiford Air, and I love their guarantees. You will, too. Check out today. Go to VandifordAir.com.
ESPN 97.5. Live in the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees. Now back to Joel and Jeremy.
You can listen to us wherever you get your podcast. Is that true? You can find us on Spotify. Can you find us on Apple Podcasts? I don't know. Can you?
You look at me like I'm going to fact check this?
I thought you put Brian on the spot.
You have the better chance of knowing than us.
Why is that?
because you work in production and you fill in for Michael every now and then.
That, what does that mean as far as me setting or the podcast?
You help the interns load the podcast. You would have a far greater chance to know than us.
Yeah, well, we're talent. We don't know anything. Submit the podcast, though, isn't through each individual place that you would download the podcast from. It's submitted through one site, and it gets sent out everywhere.
See, there you go. He knows more than we do.
We just figured it. We just found out what we didn't know, Brian.
Thank you for proving my point. I rest my case. Are you a podcast guy at all? Do you ever listen to a podcast?
Sometimes.
I'll throw on Rogan every now and then if there's a guest that interests me. I like a little true crime podcast for road trips. But I haven't had a good one in a while.
The baseball podcasts are good.
Yeah, I try not to listen to much sports on podcasts. Try to get away from it a little bit. But I like a little true crime.
Yeah, I love Small Town Murder.
Small Town Murder?
I'd recommend that one.
So it's called Small Town Murder?
Yeah, it's called Small Town Murder.
What's that one about?
It's, well, like the title would suggest, it's about crimes and murders that happen in small towns. But it's actually done by two comedians. So you have to...
I like a separation of church and state between my murder and my comedy.
That seriously, literally.
Yeah.
Trust me, in the description, you'll find out right away. I know it sounds like it's something that would be maybe offensive, but they don't joke about the actual murder itself. They joke about all the things going around at the small town, a bumbling police force, things like that. Yeah. It's really funny, and it gives you the true crime fix as well.
I never try. You know, when I'm watching my drama or my true crimes, I'm not trying to laugh. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because I want like a good the story. Datelines and the, yeah. and the those kind of shows are great if you just record them so you can get yep. through all the commercials. Anytime there's a spin coming, they always go, we'll be right back.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, so you fast forward to that. Yeah, but I don't need any comedy involved.
I'm with you. I like the seriousness of it. There was one about a murder at a furniture store that was really good. I forget the name of it, but it was really good. To Live and Die in L.A. was a pretty good one. And then you had the Amin one.
That was Serial.
Serial. Like, that was, like, one of the first ones.
Yeah, that was one that started really the craze.
That one was really good. Like, but I haven't like, fallen in love with one recently. But I'm always up for one.
Serial put out a new season about 6 months ago. It was about Guantanamo Bay, so not quite true crime, but it was still pretty good.
Yeah, that one sounds pretty good. Yeah, if you have any good podcast recommendations, 713-780-3776. College Football Playoff Committee yesterday, they unveiled their top. They did 25, but we know it's a 12-team playoff. 1 through 12, Oregon, Ohio State, Georgia, Miami, Texas, Penn State, Tennessee, Indiana, BYU, Notre Dame, 10, Alabama 11, Boise State 12. Now, BYU at 9 would be the fourth seed because the top four conference champions get a bye in the first round of the college football playoffs. What do you think that the college football playoff rankings told us? What do you think the committee told us through their rankings?
I think the first thing that stands out to me is that as good as Indiana has been, that they know that that there's a couple of Michigan and Ohio State are coming up on their schedule, and that they had them lower because they're still some stuff for them to prove.
Who would you have them ahead of, though? I mean, they're at 8. Like, I mean, you have Tennessee, Penn State.
Honestly,
yeah, I think I don't know if I would drop them. I think
drop them behind BYU.
Kind of I would drop them behind BYU for sure. What the committee told me is, I think that they have a thing for big names. I think they have a thing for cachet. I think they have a thing for blue bloods. Because I thought BYU was kind of. Yeah, I know that they get the 4 seed because top 4 conference champions. I thought BYU at 9 was not really fair. BYU, you look at their full body of work. 8-0, strength of schedule 41, 2 top 25 wins. Then you compare it to Miami, who's at 4. Yes, they have Cam Ward. That's why I think they're looking at cachet here. They're seeing the stars. Miami's 9-0. They have a strength of schedule of 54, 13 spots lower than BYU. They have one top 25 win. Why is Miami ahead of BYU? I think the committee sees the stardom in Miami. Plus, it's Miami versus BYU. Look at Texas. Texas 7-1, strength of schedule 49. How many top 25 wins does Texas have, Brian?
Teams currently or just at the time?
Right now. I don't care about the time. I hate when people do that.
Actually, one?
They have none.
They have none.
Zero
okay.
top 20. Oh, it's a pet peeve of mine that you bring up, too, by the way. Oh, we beat the number 5 team in week 1 that's now 0-8 and is the worst team in college football. Who cares? Where are they now? SMU, 8-1. Their strength of schedule 60, Texas 49, but SMU has 2 top 25 wins. I'm not saying that SMU should
be
ahead of Texas.
And their only loss is 2? BYU.
And I'm not saying that SMU should be ahead of Texas, but Texas at 5, SMU at 13, pretty big discrepancy there.
There's name brands up
absolutely.
Here.
That, to me, is my biggest takeaway, is that the committee is looking at the name brand when it comes to the their top 25.
That means that whether that's just something they're doing now, it seems like it's going to be a theme throughout because of the fact that they're going to be driven by TV. They're going to be driven by the sexiness of the matchups, the teams, and the players. They'll be looking at that throughout. That should probably be a message that you should get used to seeing from week to week with these rankings, that Notre Dame is still Notre Dame, no matter if they haven't played anybody and they're not a great football team. Notre Dame's going to get some cachet because they're Notre Dame. But more so than that, your Heisman Trophy candidates, your big-name programs, your big-name coaches, they're going to carry some weight.
Yeah. I mean, you said this yesterday, too, about Colorado. Whenever I was thinking about this, that kind of speaks to what Blankers was saying yesterday about the Colorado Buffs. BYU has more top 25 wins from teams that are in the college football playoff. They have two. Than four teams ahead of them combined. Four teams ahead of them combined, yet BYU's nine. Indiana, Tennessee, Penn State, Texas have one combined top 25 win, then BYU, who has two.
Yeah, I jump BYU. Look, I'm going to have some bias here. I'm not jumping ahead of Texas. Texas only losses to arguably the best team in the nation, at least talented on paper. But I move BYU all the way up to six. I jump them over Indiana, Tennessee, and Penn State. Penn State's barely played anybody. Their best win is against Illinois.
Yep.
Tennessee's lost to Arkansas, had to go to overtime against Florida. They're very shaky. In Indiana's strength of schedule is at like 100 and something. I can't remember the exact number. Like 104, 105, something like that. So BYU, with their two top 25 wins over SMU and Kansas State, I would jump them all the way to six.
Yeah, that BYU got the raw deal.
No, it doesn't really matter because if they win the Big 12, they're no lower than four. But
right,
and that's the greatness about the 12-team playoff is that we don't like these debates here. It's like, okay, well, seeding. Well, go win a football game. Like, if you're so ticked off about your seeding, you're not missing the playoff. You're just going to be seeded in a way that you don't think is appropriate. All right, well, go win a game. Prove us wrong. Now, the argument here would be Alabama, like the last at-large team, if like the season ended today and we're looking at their committee rankings, the argument today would be Alabama or SMU for the final at-large spot.
SMU is never going to win that.
And you're nope, right, but also not. Like, okay, well, SMU lost a game. Like, so you can't really, you know, blame a whole lot of people. You can have an argument, but you'll go win all your games. There's not going to be an undefeated team, in my opinion, that ever misses the playoff, which is great because we saw in the old system last year that an undefeated team did miss the playoff. I like that we're not arguing about 4 and 5 anymore. Now we're arguing about 11 and 13. That's a much better place to be. So I do like that. I do like that aspect of it. Now, looking at the actual brackets, you know how the NCAA tournament in basketball, they avoid conference versus conference first and second round if they can. They'll avoid second round potential matchups if they can possibly do it. Do you think we see that with the college football playoff committee? Where they, like this week, it wouldn't have mattered. They seeded it how they seeded it. But do you think whenever it's the real deal, Evander Holyfield, do you think they'll avoid conference versus conference matchups in round one?
I want to say that they won't, but I think that if the two teams have played already and it wasn't a marquee-type matchup, I think they're going to try to avoid it until the very end. But I would hope that they don't, but they probably will. Because if we've already seen it once, they probably want to spice it up a little bit.
Yeah, I think that – I don't think they'll ever admit it, but I think that they're going to try to avoid them. I really do.
I can see
if it's a sexy matchup, though, because to me, like, their ultimate goal here is sexy matchups for TV, and especially since these first round games
it shouldn't be.
Well, I know, but that's what is good. Oh, okay, well, beyond the actual ranking, I'm saying building, if you get the right 12 teams in, to me, the rankings after that, I can live with a little bit here and there if it's to get better matchups. I think especially with these games being on home sites, potentially where the games have been played before, I think they want the drama of a potential conference rivalry in that first round to give some extra juice versus some sort of mismatch that no one wants to see. So I don't think they're going to run away from a conference.
I don't think it's a runaway. I think it's more trying to be fair to a conference that might be loaded versus a conference that is not. Like, you only have one conference versus conference matchup. If we used yesterday's bracket as the final bracket, it'd be 6-seed Texas, 11-seed Alabama. Would they jump 6-seed Texas over 5-seed Ohio State? That way Texas plays Boise State, Ohio State plays Alabama to avoid the conference matchup. You're still getting a sexy matchup with Ohio State and Alabama.
I think they want that. No, yeah, I don't think maybe they run away from it. I think it adds actually something to the appeal for TV. So I think they're not going to go crazy and just completely mess up the rankings to get that. But if they can do it within a margin, like a reasonable margin of error, I think they're going to try to do that.
They should just rank them how they rank them and let the chips fall where they may.
True.
That's the way
that
it should
That's
be.
That's the way it should
That's
be.
That's the way it should be. It's a thought I had.
People would love to see Texas-Georgia rematch. People would love to see...
I don't want to see the Texas-Georgia rematch.
I'm not talking about the outcome. We're just talking about the rematch. People would love to see Ohio State-Oregon rematch because that was a hell of a football game. Like, the networks are going to want to see those kind of, like, replays. If Indiana doesn't hold up well against, you know, Ohio State or Oregon types, if they end up playing them in the Big Ten championship game, whatever, they're not going to want to see that again.
Yeah. Yeah, it's gonna be fun, though. I am looking forward to it. Corey on the text line asks us, how does Big 12 tiebreaker work? Head-to-head competition is the first tiebreaker. If there's two teams, or even three teams, if they're 2-0 against the other two teams. Win percentage against all common conference opponents among the tied teams. Win percentage against the next highest-placed common opponent in the standings. So that's how it's done. That's straight from the top of my head, too. That's how knowledgeable I am. 713-780-ESPN. Are you blessing or are you stressing? Our guy Garrett joins us next. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
We are in the thick of basketball season already. The pro game underway. College game is underway. You're jonesing for a little bit of basketball. Well, if you are, you need a goal for Pro Dunk Hoops. They have the highest quality basketball goals you'll ever find. Greatest goals on the planet. Tempered glass backboard gives you that true, authentic feel. Stainless steel hardware. Rust proof. You have to have that in Houston. Also, height adjustable. That's right. You can lower it down to 5 feet, raise it up to 10 feet if you want to work on your shot. Well, raise it up to regulation. You want to throw down some jams? Lower it all the way down to 5 feet. Their new goal, Thor, you can raise and lower the goals with a drill. Lightning adjust feature, 5 to 10 feet in a matter of seconds. It's easy to do. It's fun to do. It's idiot-proof for people like me. And their accessories are next level. LED light kits for night play. Gets dark earlier. You might have noticed that. Backstop nets, pole pad lettering, and lots, lots more. And you can order all of this, including professional installation online. You don't want to install it. I understand. You don't want a box to show up on your driveway with 1,000 pieces. And you have to assemble them. Let the pros from Pro Dunk do all of that hard work for you. You don't install. Let the pros of Pro Dunk do that for you. Call right now, 281-351-9822, 281-351-9822, and visit ProDunk.com. That's ProDunk.com.
Hey, feeling good.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Brand.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Brian thinks he's clever. Blessing or stressing with Garrett. HoustonStressins.com, IG Houston Stressins, text and commenter on TikTok and Twitter. What are we blessing or stressing today, Garrett?
Well, as always, we got a lot that we are blessing and stressing about. The first one off the rip is going to be, are we blessing or stressing the notion that the Jets' loss wasn't as bad as we think? I'm stressing that it wasn't as bad as we think. I know a lot of us saw that game before the game, 2-6 Jets team. This should be an automatic win. I was cautious of this before the game. I felt this was a team that was better than their record. You know, them getting Devontae Adams for them was huge. And you know, obviously he had been on the team for a couple of weeks, but I feel like they hadn't really had a chance to get that going. And then the last part of that is, too, I mean, this was a team that was desperate. Their backs were against the wall. I thought it was imperative in this game if we didn't get out to an early lead and let them hang around and we were playing with fire. Obviously, we didn't play our best. O-line was terrible like it has been the past 3 or 4 weeks. But even then, there were still several plays throughout the game where they go the other way and, you know, we still have a shot to win. So I'm still blessing that I think that it wasn't as bad as what we think.
I'm the opposite. I am stressing it. I thought they were going to lose. I felt like short week against it, like you mentioned, a desperate team, which was another thing that I was harping on. But the way that they lost, the way we came out of who played badly in the way that we lost, made me feel even worse than just losing itself. The fact that I thought that it might be a hard-fought game, I thought it might be a back-and-forth game. I thought that it, you know, there was a lot that you could probably have positively go your way before you lose the game. When I came out of that game with the way Kenyon Green played, with the way the offensive line played, with the way the mistakes were happening and the injuries were piling up and everything that happened on top of it, I couldn't. It was worse. It was far worse for me. And it's not. I know everybody's stressing. It's a wake up call. It's a punch in the mouth. It's a wake-up call, and it's a kick in the groin, and it needs to be something that changes immediately because it could be a bigger factor in this season than we think.
I think it's I'm going to get profound here for a second. I think it's relative. What exactly are we talking about? Are we talking about for like a championship contender, or are we talking about a team whose ceiling is the divisional round? Because if it's a team that's the ceiling's the divisional round, no, I'm not really stressing this. They're going to win their division still at ease, two-game lead, virtually three, because you had the tiebreaker over the Colts, which means you're probably going to get a home game, like same situation as last year. But if you're talking about like being a true contender and the closing the gap between Kansas City and Baltimore, certainly from a court of public perception, then I am stressing it. Now, there's a lot of ifs, right? You know, you didn't have Nico Collins. You're going to have a different left guard by default, because Kenyon Green is done. First time, playing without Stephon Diggs. Like, that's a factor. Will Anderson played, what, seven snaps? Like, that is something that, you're not at your best. And Nico Autry only his second game. So that wasn't the best Texans team we'll see, knock on wood. Injuries play a part of that. But that's not the best Texans team we'll see from this point going forward. So I guess I'm blessing it from that point of view. But I guess I'm stressing it from the other point of view that I don't think that the Texans are closing. In fact, I think it's gotten greater. I think the divide between the Texans and Kansas City and Baltimore is larger now than it was at the start of the year.
And we've yet to take that next step to have a dominant road win against a good team, which if we want to be a contender like you're talking about, now it's basically if we don't get home field advantage, a deep playoff run is out of the picture. But my biggest thing is I think the Jets aren't nearly as bad as people think. I see them making a run right now. So that's kind of like my basis behind that.
Their personnel offensively, too, is, I think, problematic for the Texans, especially if you don't have Will Anderson, because you are losing the ability to get pressure on Rodgers, although Rodgers does get rid of the ball quick. But they're lining up either Garrett Wilson, Devontae Adams in the slot. Texans are playing man. Good luck. Like, you're not going to win those matchups. And I don't think that there's other teams around the NFL, certainly not many, that can do what the Jets were able to do offensively against you defensively, and against anybody.
And the bigger thing is that a lot of the people in the league that thought this team was a lesser than, not many lesser than teams in this league have the kind of skill position players that they have. Yeah. They've got two solid running backs, one that's really, really good in Breece Hall. You've got the receivers that have all the star power and cachet in the world, and if you didn't believe in Garrett Wilson, you saw the catch that he made to believe that he is unbelievable. And then you got a quarterback that, even though he's on the far downside of his career, to Jeremy's point, he gets it out quickly, he gets it out accurately, he makes the right reads most of the time, to where most of the lesser than teams don't have that kind of star power and talent.
And a top 10 defense.
Right, and their defense can play. And they got Reddick back, and Reddick was a factor in the game.
And so Reddick and Devontae Adams, well, people are like, oh, they've been back. But like now that was Reddick's second game, I believe, and that was Devontae's third game. So just because they didn't beat, weren't world beaters the first couple games, we kind of caught them at a bad time is what I was saying. But I guess
Williams,
time will tell.
Quinnen Williams versus Ken Green.
I mean, that alone, we saw that matchup on paper, and it's like, good luck,
Yeah, that was a bad matchup.
Yeah, but next up, this is probably something y'all have been talking about all week. Are we blessing or stressing the fact that we did not trade for an offensive lineman and or a wide receiver? I'm probably the minority. I'm mildly blessing this. I know there's been a couple sound bites that have come out from pressers with D'Amico and Caserio and their approach. And for one, I'm not surprised, to be honest. I mean, the way the two of them have operated and talked, they kind of seem to be conservative. Caserio, specifically, he comes off as the GM who will never have a knee-jerk reaction and be overly aggressive. He'll never get taken advantage of in a trade. He kind of, when it comes to him, and if he feels like he gets a good deal, he does it. And then to double with that, D'Amico is the kind of guy that believes in his guys, maybe to his own fault at times. But I would have liked to get an O lineman was my big thing, but there are some in-house options, and I'm a mild bless.
Stressing it. I'm pissed off about it. I made no bones about it. I said it was not something they should explore doing. They had to do. And the fact that they didn't do it, and you could have done multiple moves, and we saw multiple teams make multiple moves that are in the category that you want to put yourself in the AFC, regardless of where you think they should be, top four-ish type, Pittsburgh top five-ish type. But at the same time, you knew you were losing a starting guard for the year no matter what, on top of the fact that he was playing terribly before you got into this situation. You knew there was something you could do to start trying to get out, even if it's just depth. Because you also found out what we talked about last week, and I was hell-bent on, was when you took Kenyon Green out of the game, benched him, and then when Patterson got hurt, put him back into the game instead of putting Kendrick Green into the game, it basically told you Kendrick Green probably can't play. So now you know that you got that. When he came into the Jets game, he showed you he can't play. Kenyon Green's out for the year. Whether you add depth or you're trying to actually add a guy that could possibly start at some point for you, the fact that you did nothing there alone is stressing beyond belief. And if you could have added a receiver for a sixth or a seventh round pick, like a Thielen, like a Slayton, like guys like that, that could have helped you be better in your three receiver sets than with Mechie and Hutchinson, who were not very good, then you should have done that too. And other teams were able to do what you didn't or wouldn't do, and that's stressing.
Yeah, I don't know how you couldn't be stressing it, even if you're like not that upset about it. Like, where's the bless here? Where's the win? Where's the positive that you save like a sixth or seventh round draft pick? So I just don't understand the victory of it. Now, I'm okay with them trying really hard and then falling short. Like, D'Amico today made it sound like they tried and they fell short.
Which we don't know.
It takes two to tango. So, like, I understand that. Like, you weren't able to get something done. You didn't want to overpay. Cool. What bothered me, and I know that you were posting about this earlier, was Nick Caserio and John Harris and Rock and Roll's kind of reaction, like mocking the idea of, you know, helping the team at the deadline is some, like, you know, great idea. Like, we're above the idea of needing to improve our team at the playoffs. Like, talking about popcorn farts and Nick Caserio, like, oh, this is, you know, these are just players that really aren't that significant. Where, okay, well, that means you're insulting DeAndre Hopkins, the second greatest receiver in Houston Texans history. If you said these are just players in the final year of their deal and a transactional, all this stuff, well, you're insulting some pretty dang good players that were traded at the trade deadline. So I didn't love their attitude. I thought that Casera is very flippant about it.
Yeah.
So I didn't like that. So I'm stressing mostly the attitude. But also, every single AFC team with a winning record that's at least 6-3 and better made a trade. Kansas City made multiple trades. Buffalo traded for Amari. Baltimore made multiple trades. Even the Pittsburgh Steelers, who are not a contender, made multiple trades. The only winning teams in the AFC that didn't make trades, or at least helping your team, because the Texans traded away Davis, you, the Chargers, and the Broncos. So you're telling everybody we're in the class of the Broncos and the Chargers and not with the Chiefs, the Ravens, the Bills, and even the Steelers. And I stress that part of it.
So I think, like, we have to remember, too, like, we can't just look at those teams and then say we have the exact same scenario. So the reason I'm mildly blessing is because the position we needed was guard. And it's, for one, it's hard to trade for a guard. And then, two, to trade for an elite guard, I could imagine the draft capital isn't going to be what we're seeing for a sixth, seventh-round pick. So there's that. I also don't know. I assume this isn't the case, but maybe it's harder to trade for a guard and acclimate him into your scheme with your zone scheme. Who knows if that's the case? Or maybe they just had that much more confidence in their in-house options with Jarrett Patterson. That's why I mildly bless it, the fact that we didn't overreact to it. Only time will tell if this worked out. But it is important, too, to realize, in my opinion, that our situation was different. The receiver, to me, was not a necessity, but could have been nice. Obviously, from the Jets game, the third wide receiver did not step up. But again, I think we didn't even get a chance to see what they could do because the pass protection was so bad. So it was kind of hard to get a full picture on that. So it's tough. I mean, I'm definitely not happy.
Right. It's mostly the attitude for me, because I'm with you on offensive line. Like, I don't think that you can trade for an offensive lineman that's starting caliber at this point of the year. Only one offensive lineman was traded. He was a tackle. Minnesota had a great need because they lost a guy for the entire year, and they traded a fifth. They traded a fifth and got Robinson and a seventh rounder back. So it wasn't so much that they didn't get something done, although it made me a little disappointed, but it was more the attitude.
Well, it's almost just like, at the very least, a signal to the fan base, like, we're trying to win. Yeah. I feel like that's what fans feel like, is, hey, you're just sitting here with your hands.
Yeah, and that's why D'Amico's answer is fine. Like, it takes two to tango. Okay, well, that means that you tried, whereas Casario's like, oh, we're above that. Okay, all right, well, I don't like that.
But I still, even if you're not trying to get a starting caliber guard, I still wanted to get someone that has offensive line experience in the NFL that'd be better than Kendrick Green, that could be better, you know, across the line regardless of where they play, so you have depth. Because if you're telling me Patterson's going to play there, well, then he's also your backup center, and, you know, and then Kendrick Green can't play, so you're going to need at least another guy there as well, regardless of Patterson starting or however you reconfine your offensive line. And you didn't even try and get more depth in the building that you really needed, regardless, because you were losing a starter and because your third string guy can't play.
And their option was to sign the two guys. I forget their names, but they signed one, I believe, two guards, and that's, or guard tackles. And that's when I saw those news pieces coming out. I was like, okay, they're not going to trade. And you know, that's ended up happening. So
they claimed a guy minutes ago, too.
Just off the Patriots, correct?
Right? Zachary Thomas played linebacker back in the day. He's transitioned now to an offensive tackle.
Football playing Jesse sounds like a Nick Caserio guy.
Yeah.
Sounds Texans, like a tight end from Ohio State they drafted.
Yeah, Cade Stover played all over the field.
He's a tackle. Is this a sign?
This is a side note, but this is one thing I would like to see them do with pass pro. Why don't they put an extra O lineman in there with a heavy set? Like, we'll see it with the Lions. They do it the most on first and second down, and they've had a lot of success out of it.
Yeah.
If you're having issues, why trot 2-3 tight ends that are undersized out there? Why not put an extra tackle out there?
Have they? I know that the Texans have tried that in the past, and certainly not this year. I'm not even sure it was under DeMeco. It might have been even Bill O'Brien. I know that they've done it in the past, but yeah, I haven't seen it in a while.
Yeah.
Did they do it last year?
Don't the Jets do it sometimes too?
We did it this year with Kendrick Green, but that was more so about
a fullback.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, when worst comes to worst, if you got to try different options, that's a side note, but that's just something I've thought about. So
I don't hate that idea. But is Zachary Thomas tackle off of waivers? It means he's taking a spot on the 53.
So he took the one that was vacant, so maybe that's not good for Nico. I mean, that's a whole other conversation.
Yeah.
We've had already today once, yes.
Is this tackle death because you're moving Titus Howard to guard? Mm.
I, for one, am for that, and we can kind of get into that here on my last topic. But the next one I got is, are we blessing or stressing the belief that the Texans can beat the Lions this Sunday night? I am blessing this. I know I'm an optimistic guy. Again, I'm optimistic. I briefly dove in today, but at the surface, the reason I'm intrigued by this is I think the Lions' defense is not as good as we think, primarily, and I know we've all heard this, and it may not mean much to y'all, but as far as pressure rate from the Lions' defensive line, they are 25th in the league with around like 32%, juxtaposed to the Texans' D-line for comparison. They're like number two with like 40-plus percent. So that projects to be a good matchup for a struggling O-line. And then they run more man covers than any team in the league, and C.J. Stroud is known to do great against man. Obviously, there's been some games this year where it hasn't happened that good because of protection, but from that aspect alone, I think this is a get-right game for our offense.
I'm stressing it. I'm going to tell you that having seen the Lions play last week and watched it pretty closely, their secondary is really good. They're adding Za'Darius Smith, who can get after the quarterback, and not that he's Aiden Hutchinson, but he can give you a little bit more of that pressure that they're looking for from the edge. And the fact that from the standpoint of offensively, everything that they're going to do, they're indoors, which last week was their first outdoor game of the year, and now they're back indoors this year on Sunday Night Football. The only thing you can hope for is that they're coming off that big win and that there might be a little bit of a letdown, but Sunday Night Football is probably not going to let that happen. They're extremely talented on both sides of the football. Their offensive line is huge. They have weapons galore, and Goff is playing his best football. I'm stressing this game.
Yeah, I'm going to stress it too because I'm an internal optimist. But look, Texans play better at home. Like, they're a better home team than they are a road team, obviously. Most teams are. But their splits are outrageous. Like, what they do at home versus what they do on the road, they're two different teams. So can they be a team that loses on the road against New York and then beats Detroit? Yeah, they can. But I'm not sure Nico Collins is going to play. Like, I don't really have an idea.
Factor.
Like, if he doesn't play, then I don't feel great. I think higher of Detroit's defense than you do. Yeah, you lose touch, and I don't think that you're going to see Smith, right, that he's not going to play. He's going to play, but I don't think he's going to play a ton.
Za'Darius Smith?
Yeah.
I think he is.
No, they say he's going to play, but I don't think he's going to play a ton. Oh. How many snaps does he get?
It's yeah, that's 50%, a question mark for me.
80%? Like, yeah. I think it's closer to 50 than 80. But I do think he'll play. Now, second game without Diggs, you know, you're going to have a new offensive line. Like, you might have seen it before, Patterson's at left guard, but this will be the first time that you're starting a new offensive line. So I'm stressing this one. I don't feel great about it.
Well, I mean, to your point, too, I mean, how much better we're at home. The biggest thing is our defense is absolutely elite at home. I mean, look what we did to Josh Allen, 9 for 30. Anthony Richardson twice, or not twice, but once at home. And then Caleb Williams is also looking terrible out there, too.
Yeah.
So I think Goff, for me, the key is, you know, their run game is dominant. Their O-line is dominant. And we're pretty good at stopping the run. So if we can kind of settle that down and then be forced Goff into third and longs, we can really get some pressure on him. And because Goff is, he's been playing great right now, but when Goff looks bad, he looks bad.
They're so good. He hasn't looked bad much this year.
No.
Like, go look at his completion percentage. It's nuts. And they stay out of those third and longs so well.
Game.
They look so, like, they don't get in third and longs.
They don't. And
that's
the
whole
thing
key.
They're not afraid to take fourth down on and go for it.
Exactly.
He St. Brown is basically his security blanket, but he's got LaPorta. He's got guys all over the field. He's got so many weapons.
That's the thing.
That J-Mo's back.
Yeah, he can do whatever the hell he wants.
Their
and
passing
the running
options.
Game is good. With the two-headed monster at running back just makes it all so scary.
It's insane.
Time for one more.
Yeah, so this one is blessing or stressing the confidence on our in-house options for the O-line to get the pass pro straightened out. I'm neutral on this. I'll wait and see. But right now, as it projects, it seems like I assume what they're going to do is roll back out there with what they did when they benched Kenyon Green, which is put Patterson at left guard. There's definitely some options, like you alluded to, putting Titus at guard and Patterson at center. That's kind of what I would prefer, and then Blake Fisher at right tackle. But I think that's too much of rock in the boat. But that's because I think Scruggs hasn't been playing that well, and he might be a cause of more of the issues with communication. But hopefully, you know, just plugging in Patterson at left guard, better play there, helps him at center.
Yeah, I'm stressing it because the other thing that you didn't mention is the fact that Patterson coming off a concussion, if he goes down, now what the hell are you going to do, right? Because you know that Kendrick Green can't play dead, and you know that Kenyon Green is out for the year. So you need to have other solutions there, and that's when you might have to get into the musical chairs of moving Howard down the line. I don't like any of it because the depth wasn't improved. I don't like it because of the fact that Patterson's coming off a concussion, but I'm going to trust that he could possibly do it. I think Jeremy Brunt made the suggestion, and to your point, if Scruggs is struggling at all, maybe it's something that I can see down the line, but not this game, to where you could put Patterson back at center to try something there and even maybe try Juice at guard. But I don't like the fact that the options you have against a team that's this good is Patterson just moving to guard.
I'm blessed that your offensive line's going to get better. You just can't avoid – you can't have another injury. Like, if you're without Jared Patterson, okay, now you're toast. I think that the move is Jared Patterson to one of the interior offensive line spots. I kind of want to get a look at center to see if the coverage calls and the protection calls look different. Like, if that's the answer, it's like, oh, okay, we found something here. So I kind of want to get a look at Patterson at center to see if it helps in that regard. My guess is he'll just play left guard, though, and Juice will stay at center. That's plan A for me. Patterson, Scruggs, left guard, center. Scruggs, Patterson, left guard, center. Plan A and plan B. My plan C is the Titus at guard thing. Like, that's the last resort. That's the final thing that you can turn to other than playing guys that you're picking up from other people's practice squads and off of waivers.
Yeah, because we talked about, I don't want Blake Fisher playing right tackle for me.
Is he one of your best five, though?
I think he might be. The problem is it's a limited sample size, so we really don't know.
I mean, he's a second rounder.
It's kind of a gamble.
He's supposed to be. That doesn't mean he is.
Well, he was.
he struggled early on. But
he's supposed to be one of your best five is what I'm saying.
Yeah,
I don't know that he is yet.
But yeah, I'm not sure.
My logic to back that up is the O-line last year was somehow light years better than this O-line, and that was with Titus Howard, who's terrible at guard, at left guard, and Patterson at center, and with Fant at tackle. So now you have Fisher over Fant, and that's basically the same.
I'd push back on that. I think Fant was pretty dang good.
I think he was, too.
He was good, but like, can Fisher be at that same level? Like,
can he be? Yeah, eventually, yes. Now, no, I don't think so.
Yeah, I haven't loved his reps.
Yeah. He struggled to begin, and he's shown some promise. I mean, that would be a little bit of a gamble. I doubt they'd do that, but regardless, we got options, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe not great options, but options. What are you working on at HoustonStressons.com this week?
Same stuff. I got a shirt on today. It's a CJ Stroud Hope shirt, if y'all want to check it out.
Nice. Why did you wear that today?
I don't know. Just, you know, just first thing I grabbed out of the closet. It's a coincidence, you know.
I got you.
Same old stuff. Just I got a show tonight, and, you know, same old, same old.
HoustonStressons.com, Instagram, HoustonStressons. You can find them on Texans Commenter on TikTok and Twitter. Look forward to doing it again next week.
Yep, appreciate it.
Garrett, HoustonStressons.com. What is the biggest, most unexpected landslide in sports, in Houston sports history? 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
All right, guys, before we go to the break, BMAC back here with you. And I've been telling you guys a lot about Underdog Fantasy's Pick'em games, but that's not the only way they have for you to maximize your fun watching games. You got to try Streaks on Underdog Fantasy, where you select two players from different teams to start your entry. And if your first two picks are both correct, you'll continue your streak one pick at a time. If you get up to 11 picks right in a row, you'll win up to 1,000 times your money and achieve greatness. Right now, for tonight, I'm starting a streak entry on the Rockets versus Spurs game with higher on both 9.5 rebounds for Şengün and 19.5 points for Wimby. So join me and let's go streaking. And don't forget, while playing Pick'em, that you can cash out a winning entry early by just tapping the Win Now button to cash out your entry whenever you want. And with that type of flexibility, why would you play anywhere else other than with Underdog Fantasy? So download the app, sign up with promo code BMAC, that's BMAC, and deposit now to get up to $1,000 in bonus cash instantly. That's promo code BMAC, BMAC. Must be 18 plus and present in state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit ncpgambling.org.
ESPN
97.5.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter is a premium interior paint and primer in one with a tough, lasting formula. It provides great scrub resistance and durability with remarkable hide and a smooth finish. Save big on Dutch Boy's DuraFighter paint at Menards and start your next project today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.